All right. So this is Connections Over Coffee, our time to rise. So Kyle and I were just having a chat about what we're about. And we're just here to connect and build deeper relationships. But I always want to offer some tools to help you build those deeper relationships. And so the word RISE, our time to rise, RISE is an acronym that stands for in our lives, in general, at large, is to reconnect, is the R. The I is impact, how to make an impact on your world. The S is storify. Now, I know that's a weird word, storify. The author of the book, Connections Over Coffee, Our Time to Rise, the author of the book, he actually created that word to storify, and it's to put your message into a story, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And then the E is to elevate just your world around you. So with that said, we've talked about reconnecting with our goals, our dreams, you know, our vision, and then an impact. Once we reconnect, we can start making an impact in those areas. But how do you storify? How do you turn it into your story? And the way I like to turn it into my story and what I want to talk about today is we talk about when you have a business, and I have a business, Kyle has a business. When you talk about having a business, you always talk about you know, what is your vision and what is your mission statement? But I want to say that even if you don't have a business and you just life at large, you can still have a vision and a mission statement for your life, for, you know, what you want to represent in this world. And so I like to start by having a word for the year. And last year in 2021, my word was gratitude. And in 2022, my word is giving. I wanted to give more. So giving was my word. And so with all of that said, I had to think about, well, what is my vision? Well, my vision, again, is what RISE stands for. I wanted to reconnect with the things that really matter. I wanted to make an impact on my world and meet people where they really are. You know, again, entering the conversation in their heads and not making them enter the conversation in mine. And how do you put that into a story so that you can elevate all of the folks around you? And so the way I like to storify is once I have a clear vision on what my mission statement is, and my mission is to give more, and I focus on that word for the year. So everything that I do, I try to bring it around my word for the year. And so whenever I have a crossroads in anything that I'm doing, you know, let's say you're just in line at Starbucks and, you know, somebody behind you is kind of pushing a little bit, and your first reaction might be like, what's his problem? You know, I was here first. But because my word is giving, to give more, I might say, would you like to go on ahead of me? Because maybe that person is in a hurry. And because I'm not punching a time clock these days, I'm not. And maybe it makes a huge difference in their world for just that day that they were able to go faster in line. I don't know about you, but I've been there when I had to punch a time clock and had to be somewhere at a certain time. And you just, you know, you want that cup of coffee, or you stop to do whatever. And all of a sudden it's kind of like, why is the line so slow? Why am I in the slowest line at the grocery store when I'm trying to get to the birthday party? And I just want to pick up, you know, these cupcakes, and I just can't get through the line. And wouldn't it be wonderful if someone said, you seem to be in a hurry. Go ahead of me. It's fine. Wouldn't that make your day? And so I tell myself that story, that, and it's the stories we tell ourselves. So I tell myself that story is, you know, once upon a time, I use the Disney version, once upon a time, but then I discovered this and now I can be this way. And so I try to do that. I try to say, once upon a time, I was that person that was always in a hurry. I'm just using this as an example. And that I was always that person thinking, why can't this line go faster? I've got to be somewhere. I'm just so stretched so thin. And, you know, again, I was a single mom working two jobs. And, you know, I had to punch a time clock, and I was trying to get all the stuff done in between the two jobs, you know, and that was hard. I mean, I remember just going to the daycare and thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I'm fourth in line. I'm going to be so late for work today because I had to drop my daughter off at the daycare. And try as I might to get out the door sooner, you know how that goes. You know, she'd have an accident and I'd have to go change her clothes again as a toddler, or, you know, or whatever, or maybe she wasn't feeling well and I had to make the decision, you know, does she go to the daycare? Do I get a hold of my mom? What do? Do I call off work? You know, there was always this huge catastrophe just waiting to happen. And so I now, in my time to rise, I try now to think about, if I reconnect with what's really important and I want to make an impact on my world, what story do I tell myself? How can I storify what it is that I'm trying to do and the person I'm trying to be so that I can elevate all of those folks around me? So anyway, that's my message for today. So Kyle, what are your thoughts? And jump right in there.
Yeah, of course, you know, everyone loves storyfying, even if they didn't know that was a word, you know, even before we really had, you know, the written language. That's really how history and experiences were shared, was just through telling common stories. So I mean, storytelling, you know, goes back to like literally the caveman days, you know, the finger paintings on the walls. And I read a book by Tony Robbins last year, and he talks about, you know, storytelling. And well, what he talks about is people tend to replay the negative stories over and over, over in their head, but not the positive stories. And so he talks about taking time to reflect and appreciate the good things as much as we tend to hearken on the negative things over and over again. And he's, you know, he pointed out that, you know, you are in control of replaying that story in your head. You can pick and choose which stories to ruminate on and which stories to try to forget. And you do have that power. And so it's nice to remind yourself of that once in a while. And I do yoga almost every day. And at the end of the yoga session, they always talk about, you know, doing a little meditation and reflecting and trying to reflect on the positive things, you know, to try to keep your mind focused on the positive aspects of the story. So yeah, definitely. I totally agree with all of that.
Well, I love Dan Miller, and he's written several books. And he talks about having a personal mission statement. So I don't know if you've ever thought about having one, but a personal mission statement, this is Dan Miller's words, it defines who you are as a person and identifies your purpose, whether that's in the office or simply in life. It explains how you aim to pursue that purpose and why it matters so much to you. So he is an author and he's a career coach, Dan Miller. He says a good mission statement should include three things: your skills and abilities, what you like to do, your personality traits, which is how you operate, and your values, dreams, and passions, why it is that you want to excel. And so that's it. It should just be one or two sentences long in simple terms and exactly what you're all about without any principles tacked on. And so why is it useful? Whether you're a stay-at-home parent, store manager, college student, business executive, truck driver, crafting a personal mission statement will serve you well in life, and everyone should have one. Kyle, do you have one?
I mean, not articulated in such a way, but, you know, I think everyone kind of has, you know, that kind of a little voice in their head that helps them analyze, you know, each situation. I love the concept. I will sit down and put pen to paper now, but I haven't yet to date.
Well, it says that how to write a personal mission statement. It says once they're written, personal mission statements seem simple, but if they're well done, they require a lot of effort to create. And I can see that because it's like, what do I put in this? It says, so take some time to think about and write down how each of Miller's three areas apply to you. That lays a good foundation for crafting your mission statement. So think about your life principles and goals. Why did you set these goals? And again, mine is to give more. So I have to think, why did I set that? So how do your goals make you a better person? The mission statement should answer these questions in 50 words or less. So try to get to the heart of who you are and exclude unnecessary details. Don't worry if your statement doesn't mirror someone else's. Every statement is different because no two people are the same. And then put it to use. Once you've written your mission statement, start using it. Frame it. Put a copy in your home or your home office so you see it often. You want to surround yourself with your own positive attitude. Not only should you live according to your personal mission statement, but it's also important that others know about it as well. You want people to know you're going to live up to what you wrote, so spread the news. Accountability from those closest to you will help you stick to it. Now, examples. Speaking of letting people know, they talked about Dave Ramsey a little bit in this article. Ramsey Solutions mission statement is posted throughout the building, and every team member is required to know it like the back of their hand. It's why we exist, and it goes like this. We provide biblically based common sense education and empowerment that gives hope to everyone in every walk of life. Now, that's the Ramsey mission statement. So they basically, they're putting together common sense education, and they want to give hope to everyone with the common sense education. But that's a business mission statement. So here is some personal ones. Here's from a successful CEO in business. It says, to be a teacher and to be known for inspiring my students to be more than they thought they could be. That's Oprah Winfrey's mission statement. To be a teacher and to be known for inspiring my students to be more than they thought they could be. Here is one, to have fun in my journey through life and learn from my mistakes. That is Sir Richard Branson, founder of the Virgin Group. Here is one, to use my gifts of intelligence, charisma, and serial optimism. I like that, serial optimism, to cultivate the self-worth and self and net worth of women around the world. That's Amanda Steinberg, founder of Daily Worth. And so here is a couple others. Here's a well-known nonprofit, to inspire hope and contribute to health and well-being by providing the best care to every patient through integral clinical practice, education, and research. That's the Mayo Clinic. Seeking to put God's love into action. Habitat for Humanity brings people together to build homes, communities, and hope. That's the Habitat for Humanity mission. And one last one is to create content that educates, informs, and inspires, and that is the public broadcasting system, PBS. So those are just some examples. So again, you see how short they are, short and sweet. So yeah, like you, Kyle, I'm going to have to put pen to paper and play around with what my personal mission statement is. I know what my business mission statement is, but I'm not sure. Again, I want to give more. I want to be known for that. Again, my word last year was gratitude. And I just had gratitude for everything that I did have and where I was and where my place was in society. And then this year, I realized how much I had. And so this year, then I just wanted to give back. And so, yeah, very, very important stuff. So thoughts about the ones that I read? Did any of those resonate with you?
I like the one that said, have fun and learn from your mistakes. I'm like, that's really simple and poignant.
Yeah, to have fun in my journey through life and learn from my mistakes. And that's—
Yeah, because life is a journey. And that's another— Yes. —one of those things. So many people get stuck on focusing on the future, and you know, the meditation and focusing on the now. And reflecting on, you know, the past is very, very important. Most people just get stuck in that one gear, though, looking forward.
So I want to, and again, I don't want to change the subject totally, but on the same subject, but a little different vein, is the book called The Five Love Languages. Have you heard of that?
Heard of it, have not read it.
Okay. And again, I'm going to look it up here. The Five Love Languages, and it looks like it's Gary Chapman wrote the book, and he started off, I think he's faith-based, but the book is so good, and it comes out in, it's kind of like chicken soup for the soul, and then all of a sudden they had chicken soup for the soul for teenagers, and chicken soup for the soul for what, you know, they had all these different variations. Well, the five love languages started the same way. It's the basic five love languages. And then they had five love languages for teens and five love languages on the job. And, you know, so there's all these other variations. But anyway, I read the book, and it's incredible. And I don't know if I can pull out what the five love languages are. Maybe it'll tell me here. Nope, that's actually where you can get the book. I'm actually on my phone looking to see. Here's an overview. It doesn't tell me. Okay, here we are. So the five love languages, and I think this is important, and I haven't decided what yours is. I know what mine is. I haven't decided what yours is yet, Kyle. But there are five love languages, and what the book is telling us is that we all speak all five. And what happens is we have usually one or two that are our primary love language. And not only do we give in that language, but we receive in that language. And I'm going to give you some examples after I read the book. But I'm going to tell you the five. The first one is words of affirmation. That's one of the love languages. Oh, you're so wonderful, Kyle. That's words of affirmation. I'm affirming you. You're so smart. You're so wonderful. Acts of service. Acts of service, it would be like helping people, just constantly helping. Oh, here, let me get that. Oh, here, let me get the door. Let me get the chair. Let me take your dirty plate. Let me, you know, you're just helping. Receiving gifts or giving gifts. Gifts is one. And it doesn't have to be expensive gifts. Quality time and physical touch. So those are the five. So affirmation, helping, gifts, time, physical touch. And so I remember when my daughter was a teenager and I would, you know, again, I was a single mom working two jobs and I would be racing out the door and she was old enough to, you know, be at home for a little bit by herself, you know, as I was getting home or whatever, if I had to leave early. And so I would say, just clean up your room, honey, just pick up your room. You know, I'm out of gas here. I'm out of energy. I'm working two jobs. Just pick up your room. Just get your dirty clothes in the hamper. So when I do laundry, I at least all your dirty stuff is in there. And I would come home and she would meet me at the door with this picture she drew. And she'd say, look, mommy, look what I made for you. And I'd look around and her room would be, and I'm like, really? You spend all your time drawing pictures, really? And I remember being so frustrated. And so anyway, our time together was rather strained as it is with preteens. And so finally, when I read the book, The Five Love Languages, it occurred to me that my love languages help. So when she didn't help me, I would think she just doesn't even care about me at all. You know, she's not helping at all. But her love language was gifts. And I realized that when I just had to sit with it for a minute after I read the book, and I just thought back over her little life, and she would always want to be giving somebody something. And as she got, you know, in her preteen stage and had her first boyfriend, you know, he would give her a card, which would say really nice things, which would be like affirmation, you know, like, you're so beautiful, on a, I don't know, Valentine's card. She would take it into her room and enshrine it. She would put it on the dresser. She would have, you know, all kinds of confetti around it. And, you know, she would turn it into a gift. She would turn this card into like, look what he gave me, mom. And so I realized, just thinking over her lifestyle and how she reacted to things, I realized that her love language was gifts. So anyway, one day she came in and I had my condo at the time decorated in beautiful artwork, but it was of lighthouses. And my color scheme in my living room was white and different shades of blue. And it had these lighthouse pictures. So they were, you know, lots of, you know, ocean, water, sky type, you know, blues in the pictures. And so as soon as the word got out that I decorated in lighthouses, of course, all my nieces and all my friends started buying me all kinds of lighthouse stuff, kind of crappy stuff, you know, dollar store stuff. And I was like, I don't have room for all this stuff, because I had invested in some really nice artwork with lighthouses in it. So it wasn't overkill. It wasn't overkill at all. But my family was determined to make it overkill and just fill up my house with all these lighthouses. Well, she came home one day. She might've been 12, 13. She came home one day and she had a little votive cup to put a little votive candle in. She'd gotten from the dollar store and it had lighthouses on it. And she's like, look, mommy, look what I got you. Well, once I realized that her love language was gifts, see, not only does she receive in that language, but she speaks in that language. So I realized that she really was connecting with me with this gift. And all I wanted her to do was clean her room and put her dirty dishes in the sink. So anyway, I took her gift. I put it on the mantle. I made a big deal out of it. My mom came over. I said, Mom, look what Jen got me. She got me this beautiful little lighthouse votive. And my mom was like, oh, that's really nice. That goes really well in your living room. And so anyhow, I just kind of let it go. The next day I went to work. When I came back, the whole house was clean. Her room was done. The dishes were done. The vacuum was done. And all I did was I didn't even give her a gift. I just received her gift. But once I realized that that was her love language, the relationship changed overnight. Now, in the book, Dave Chapman claims that you can change a relationship. Just, you know, we always say, oh, it takes two. Everybody has to give 100%. He says you can change a relationship if just one of you understands love languages and you start speaking the other person's love language. He said you can change a relationship. So I use that often. I don't get real deep and heavy into figuring out everybody's love languages, but if I'm working closely with somebody for any length of time, I start to pay attention on what possibly would their love language be, because it makes a difference in how you connect. And so, Kyle, what do you think yours is? Do you know?
Yeah, I'm probably, I like to help as much as I can, wherever I can. You know, a stranger could ask me, you know, Carmela could ask me to go to DC and flip her Airbnb, and I would try to find a way to do it.
Okay, well, then you and I are on the same page, because mine is helps. And of course, that's, you know, my main. Now, we all speak all five.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, but I like little gift giving and affirmations too. But I would definitely say my biggest thing is probably the helping and the doing things for people, you know.
Yes. And I have another example. And oh, my gosh, this was right after I read the book. I had a partner at the time in the salon industry, and she was younger than I was. I was 40 when I started into the salon industry, and she was in her 20s. But she and I became partners, and she was in a relationship that didn't seem to be going anywhere. And so she said all along, she goes, if I don't get a ring by this Christmas, I'm over this relationship, because I've been in this relationship long enough, and I don't want to go on, you know, forever just being the girlfriend, and I want to take the relationship to the next level. And so, he needs to get me a ring. You know, and it wasn't about the ring. It was about taking the next step in the relationship. But when she would come to work, because she and I, of course, we worked together, you know, side by side all day long. And she was always, and I don't want to say always complaining, but when she did have a complaint about her significant other, it was like, oh my God, because she had two children, and one, her second child was, they had together. So he was the biological dad. And she would say, he doesn't help me. She said, oh my gosh. She said, I'm trying to work all day. I'm trying to get the laundry done. I've got two kids. I'm trying to get the dinner out of the way. I'm trying to get baths. I'm trying to get their homework. I'm trying to get them into bed. And she said, and he just sits on the couch. And she said, and he just pats the couch all the time and says, come over here and sit with me. Let's watch the game. And she's like, really? I've got two kids and a household to take care of, and I've worked all day, and you sit and watch the game, and I do all the work, really? And so I'm thinking to myself, she's complaining that he doesn't help. I bet her love language is helps, because she started kind of resenting him a little bit. Like, he never helps me. He doesn't help me. So finally, they decided to go away for the weekend. And she's like, we're going to go away. We're going to go up to Put-in Bay, away from the kids. We're going to spend the weekend together. And she said, and I'm going to make a decision about this relationship, because she said, it just doesn't seem to be moving in the direction that's going to work for me. So they go away for the weekend. And so all of us at the salon were kind of anxiously awaiting, you know, what's the solution here when she gets back. So we all get back together again. And she walks in, and she's got this beautiful ring. And we're like, yay, he got you the ring. So yes, he heard you, and he was just waiting for the perfect time to give you the ring. And she goes, yeah, but I think I'm going to give it back. And we're like, what? All you've said is that you wanted it to go to the next level, and you wanted this ring, and now you're going to give it back? What's going on? And she said, well, we got up there, and she said, all he wanted to do is sit on this bench and watch the sailboats go by. She goes, I was so bored. She said, I thought I was going to lose my mind. And she said, I thought, do I really want a life of this? She said, he never helps me. And all he wants me to do is just sit. And all of a sudden, Kyle, this light bulb came on to me. His love language is quality time. Her love language is helps. That's what was wrong with that relationship.
I need to read this book, and I needed to read this book 10 years ago.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is all that's wrong with their relationship, is they're just not speaking the same love language. If she would take a little bit of time and spend some additional quality time. See, once she got to put in bay, all they did was spend quality time. He was totally thrilled to give her the ring. See, because she was sitting with him on the bench watching the sailboats go by. They were having quality time in his mind. But in her mind, she was like, I had to get home and get all this work done, and he's never helping me. So if they just understood that about each other, to where he could give a little and help her a little bit, and she could give a little and spend some quality time with him, I think the relationship would have thrived. But instead, it ended up imploding because they weren't speaking the same love language.
No, but actually, I mean, if they were doing that, if he had helped just a tiny bit, that would have produced more of her free time to spend together. So actually would have been two birds, one stone kind of thing.
Exactly. Or in my case, where I realized that my daughter's love language was gifts, had she just sat down for a while and said, I'd love to watch the game with you, and then been very clear, because I don't know, a lot of women try to like think that their guy is a mind reader, like he should know to help me, you know. Well, sometimes he doesn't. Maybe you should just ask him. So if she could have even said, had she realized all of this, if she could have even said, I would love to sit and watch the game with you. Do you think you can help me with the chores when the game is over? He would have probably said, well, okay, you know. And so I think she could have changed the relationship single-handedly had she understood the love languages. And I think he could have changed the relationship single-handedly had he understood the love languages. But how impactful would it have been had they both understood the love languages? So anyway, Dave Chapman, the five love languages.
I've added that to my reading list.
And it's a simple read. It's not a very big book. It's a simple read, and just get the original basic five love languages. There's, like I said, it's now come out with the five love languages for teenagers and the five love languages for boss employee. I mean, there's all these variations, but if you just get the original five love languages, it gives you the concept of those five love languages. And I have a girlfriend in Florida, and I have just an observation. Sometimes you can observe her. I think her love language is gifts. And so every time I go to her house, I always take her something. It doesn't even have to be anything major. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'll take her some stupid little trinket, you know. I'll go to the drugstore to get something for myself, and then I'll just pick up a little something for her. And, you know, $5. It doesn't have to be major. But again, I'm speaking her love language. So when I show up with any kind of a gift, I can tell that she's always like, oh, for me? I can tell. She's just like melts. It's like, oh my gosh, Kathy bought me a gift, you know? And then she's always trying to give me something. Every time I'm at her house, you know, she's always wants to give me a gift. And she's like, here, I bought all these candles. Take one home with you. And I'm like, no. Well, here's what I learned with love languages. Giving in whatever love language is equally the same as receiving in whatever love language. So if she tries to give me something and I poo-poo it and tell her no, that tells her that I don't care for her. Even though I'm trying to be nice, like, no, don't give me your new candle. She becomes offended by that, because she really is trying to tell me that she cares about me. And so that's why when my Jennifer at 12, 13 years old, gave me the little votive with the lighthouse on it, I made a big deal once I understood the love languages. I received her gift, because that's just as important as giving, you know, as her getting a gift, as her giving one. And so I realized that also. I've got a little grandson, Corbin, and he's full of vinegar. And so every time I want to do something, he's like, I'll help you, Momo. And I'm thinking, I could go a whole lot faster without him helping, you know, like I'm trying to like fold comforters, you know, it's a lot harder to fold a big king size comforter when you have a 10-year-old hanging on the other end of it. It's a lot easier if I just do it myself. But I realize, see, that helps is his love language. And it would be like a slap in the face if I told him, no, you can't help me. I can do it faster myself. You just go play with your cars or something. That basically told him, I don't love you. But he doesn't understand it. All he knows is he feels bad when he wanted to help me and I told him no. It makes him feel bad. And so I realize that his love languages helps. And so now I give him little things to help me with, or I'll say, hey, Corbin, come and help me with this. Oh, he about stumbles over himself trying to get to me to help me with something if I ask him to help me. Because see, him helping me and me letting him help me speaks volumes in the relationship. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I do like that idea. When I had roommates, they weren't, you know, as clean as I am. So once in a while, they would try to surprise me. Hey, look, we cleaned the house. It just, which always did make me feel nice too. Just after they went to bed, I'd have to go around and get the corner that they missed. But yes, thank you. I appreciate the gesture.
But again, it made you feel like they cared about you.
Right.
Because they made an effort, you know, and so you're thinking, okay, they really do have me on their radar. They really do care about me. You know, it may not be to my standards, like, you know, like Corbin folding the king size comforter. I might redo it once he goes home, but I let him help me because it speaks volumes that he's trying, you know, to let me know that he cares about me. He wants to help me. And so I just think it's so important. It's one of those basic things that once you realize how the five love languages work, and again, it's sometimes it's hard to decide what someone's love language is. And so in the book, it gives you one project to do. It says, go back to your earliest Christmas. And what was the Christmas that you remembered the most? You know, thinking back. Well, some people will say, well, it's when I got this one gift. Or somebody might say, well, it's when I spent the day with my dad. Or it might be, it was the day that I got to help my mom bake cookies. That's the year that's my favorite. And you see, by going back as a child, because as a child, see, they don't know to hide any of these things. And I think as adults, we start to get a little convoluted in all of those. And so it's hard, like, well, what is my love language? I don't know. But if you can go back to an earlier time, what is it that you did? And mine was definitely helps. I mean, it just, as soon as I did that, it just really jumped out at me. Because I remember as a 12-year-old, I recognized that my mom and dad were both working, and I was just at that age where I could get off the bus and be home for about an hour before they got home by myself. And I remember thinking to myself, how much can I get done before they get home to help them? And I remember I would iron my mom's blouses, and because that's when you had to iron everything. I would iron my mom's blouses and I would try to straighten up the house and I'd try to get dinner started. And I would, you know, and I would try to just make sure everything was perfect before mom and dad walked through the door. And because, see, that was me trying to let them know that I cared about them. And my mom recognized that. And she would always go, oh, look what Kathy did. And so, you know, we had a very good relationship, see, because she realized, for whatever reason, she never read the book, but she recognized that that was my way of trying to let them know that I cared about them and was trying to help them. And so I remember, again, I thought, okay, helps has to be mine. And then I remember the Christmas that I remember the most was when I got to help my mom bake Christmas cookies. And because we were really tight on money. My mom was a factory worker. My dad had back surgery and wasn't working at the time. And so she baked all these cookies, and we had these little cookie tins, and we filled with tissue paper, and we filled all these cookie tins. And that was going to be her gifts for all the family, the extended family that year, because we didn't have any money to actually go buy gifts. And so everyone was going to get a tin of her baked cookies. And I remember helping with that. So I remember that being such a big deal because I got to help my mom put all of these gifts together. Now, again, it wasn't about the gifts. It was about helping, that I got to help. So anyway, do you think this is helpful in bringing your mission and your story together as to how you can serve? Because again, connections over coffee, I think it's all about making connections. It's all about building relationships, and it's all about how we can serve each other and make an impact on our world. So any final thoughts on that, Kyle? I know it's a lot of information.
Yeah, no, I mean, it did make a connection just now in my brain. You know, I do love to help. And that is the industry that I have ended up in, is helping people, educating them, helping them get to their goals and financial and success and everything. And even my previous job, when I worked in IT, I was an instructor. I was a trainer. So I was helping mm-hmm. people learn. So yeah, that actually really makes a lot of sense.
I love it.
Something you said earlier, you said you liked lighthouses. I was like, you know what? If your spirit animal could be an innate object, your spirit animal would be a lighthouse.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. That's an interesting thought. Yes. Thank you for that. What do you think yours is?
My spirit animal, I've been told by a lot of people that they see me as a fox.
Okay. Okay. And what is the connection with a fox?
I don't know. People say I'm just sly and secretive and intelligent.
Do you think you're sly and secretive?
I mean, I'm not sure, not too sure about those two. I mean, I know some people just tend to overshare, and I'm a bit more guarded and play it closer to the chest. But foxes are usually a bit more solitaire. Except for their immediate circle. So I do see that being true.
Okay, it says, when the fox is your spirit animal, you are a person who can rely on your wit and instincts, even when the deck is stacked against you.
Yeah, that's the story of my life.
Passionate and prone to dreaming big, the fox spirit sets goals and works tirelessly to achieve them. People with the fox spirit animal may find themselves to be obsessed with obtaining the future that they desire for themselves.
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate.
Ah, so maybe that is your spirit animal.
Yeah, and that's what several people have told me. I never would have picked it for myself, but I've been told by several people that that's what they see me as.
Well, that's interesting. That's very interesting. And it says, as you respond to your environment and current circumstances, your action is swift and smooth. You have little trouble adapting to new situations or overcoming obstacles on a moment by moment basis. Fox people have a natural sense of humor, and they may find it hard to keep that in check.
I love it.
Yeah. So there.
Does it say anything about lighthouses?
No, darn. Yeah. Interesting. But you know what? I love that about the lighthouse. And I don't know why I gravitate toward that. And even on my Facebook page, my cover photo is of a picture at Put-in Bay. So I added, and it was a picture I actually took, you know, from the marina up there. And I love the whole lighthouse theme. And again, when I think about, you know, my mission and my vision is that I want to use my story to help inspire folks and again, to help guide and direct. And so, yeah, the lighthouse is probably.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as you said you liked lighthouses, I was like, you know, I actually see Kathy as a lighthouse. If your spirit animal could be an innate object, there it is.
Yes. So thank you for that. Yes. Well, it is getting close to 11, so I'm going to stop recording. Kyle, thank you so much for being on with me today. It's just the two of us, but this has been a lot of fun. So. Don't go away. And we'll see everyone else next month. We meet Connections Over Coffee. And again, it's our time to rise. And we meet every month on the third Friday at 10 a.m. So we'll be back again on November 18. And so mark your calendars, November 18 at 10 a.m. We will be back again. And we will be talking next month about Elevate, the E in the word RISE, the acronym RISE, and we'll be talking about Elevate. So thanks for being with us.